We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show. Clint Sterner's Football at 4.
Four panels, eight laces, baby. And them boys over on Kirby, man, they're in training camp. Their training camp has started. I don't know if you know that show, but training camp has started. And look, these coaches can sell you on we're going to do a little conditioning for the first couple of weeks, and we're going to ramp these guys up. This acclimation period's important. And I agree, it is. All of that stuff will go on with the strength coaches. But you can't tell me that they're not over there going through walkthroughs. You can't tell me that they're not throwing routes on air. You can't tell me that they're not creating chemistry across the board in the locker room, but most importantly with Deshaun Watson and this receiving core that's got a couple of new faces in it. Here's the deal, is when you look at the 14-day acclimation period, I know, what is today, August 4th? So you got 10 days to the 14th. The 14th is when they're going to put pads on. You got, let's just say you got 10 days right here. This is an extremely valuable 10 days for the Houston Texans. You've got veteran receivers that shouldn't need, they, you don't need to teach them the offense. Yeah, they've got to get in the playbook. They've got to learn a new offense. But handling these guys with kid gloves is not a situation that the Houston Texans coaching staff is in. These guys are veterans. Get the playbook. Get your nose in the playbook. Figure out the offense. A lot of that will be done on their own. When you look at what has to happen is those guys and Deshaun Watson have to get the chemistry. Get on the field and actually do it. They've got 10 days that once their workouts are done, once the running's done, once all the agility work and stuff is done, you've got the whole afternoon to where you guys can get together and create the chemistry that's necessary. And when the team goes to training camp, show, we get to hear from these guys. We get to hear from these guys. We heard from Whitney Merciless earlier in the show. And there's one guy that I've said multiple times I think is the most important addition to this team. Not just the offense, but to this team.
You really have.
There's no doubt about it. Look, Randall Cobb is a big-time addition to this team. And, in fact, today he was asked about how can he help Deshaun Watson. Specifically, how can he help Deshaun Watson, a young quarterback for the Houston Texans. This is Texans wide receiver Randall Cobb.
I think it's talking through blitz pickups and understanding the hots and being on the same page with those. It's understanding the coverages and the way certain teams play the coverages and finding those holes and being able to fill those voids. You know, I think that I've, over the time, gotten a pretty good rapport with my quarterback, just being able to talk through those situations, having a little bit of a quarterback in my background myself, and understanding that it's not always about getting open, but getting open at the right time. So, you know, understanding where you are in a progression as a receiver, and that's, you know, some of the things that I want to make sure that I'm letting the young guys in our room know.
When we talk about...
Oh, they had to get you.
Come on, man.
Boy, I know that tore you apart.
Come on, show. That right there, that's what the hell I'm talking about. And here, again, not to get in a rearview mirror, but you look at last year, you had Kiki QT was going to be the slot. That was Deshaun Watson's security blanket, right? A guy that ended up getting in the doghouse for obvious detail, like couldn't just the details of the game, the details of playing that position. the details of the offense were obviously a problem. So you go from that to a guy that the details ain't a problem. In fact, he's a former quarterback at Kentucky.
And that's one of the things you talked about. What he said was being a former cornerback and knowing what the quarterback is looking for.
Knowing what he's looking for, providing him answers when he gets blitzed, and the value in really when things go wrong in practice.
What kind of conversation did him and Aaron Rodgers have?
Oh, I bet it was
so
beautiful.
Just around different stuff. I bet they probably – you may be able to see just to the sideline stuff, just slight changes of what those two can see. Because what else he talked about was telling the young guys to understand what everybody else is doing on the field, because he is understanding what everybody else is doing on the field that could maybe get him open in some other way.
Well, and think about what he's saying, too. He said understanding where you are in the progression. And to translate that, he knows in a certain route concept that he is the third option. So it's going to take Deshaun Watson one or two hitches in his drop to get to him. So he knows he can spend more time in the stem of his route. He can spend more time setting the defensive back up before he breaks in or out. Whereas if he's the first read, then he's got to make a quick decision, make a quick move, and present his eyes and his chest to the quarterback, either in or out. So just the improvement, the upgrade from Kiki QT in the slot last year to Randall Cobb in the slot this year is to me, it's not even close, the biggest addition for the Houston Texans from 2019 to 2020. J.J. Watt spoke to the media and Saturday, and when J.J. Watt speaks, I listen. And there's a couple of things that last year, just as a little reminder, the big-time fans that study the stats and dig a little deeper than your casual fan, you probably know these things. Third down and red zone, run defense, they were a real problem last year for the Texans. This is J.J. Watt talking about those.
I mean, you just went down a whole laundry list of things there, which is, I think, all the things that we do need to make sure we accomplish. The red zone is the biggest thing. I mean, obviously, it's pretty clear in the game of football, the team that scores the most points wins. So when teams get down in the red zone, you have to make sure you keep them out. And that's a big thing we're focused on. Obviously, getting off the field on third down, giving the ball back to our offense is huge. And one of the main ways to do that is stopping the run on first and second down, so you put them into tougher third down situations. So all those things combined are the things that will make us better. And it really comes down to all the phases, communicating, playing well together, understanding the defense, keeping offenses off guard. I think Coach Weaver's done a great job so far in our virtual meetings and in the first day we've had. And we're looking forward to keeping working with them in the future.
I think the first thing that's going to improve all of those, run defense, third down defense, red zone defense, is obviously getting guys healthy and keeping guys healthy. There were times last year when Bradley Roby,
just didn't
Jonathan
have a chance,
Joseph,
right.
J.J. Watt, you just didn't have a chance to cover guys. And then when you do get them back, whether they're not prepared physically, it takes a while to get back into game shape, or it just takes a while to get back used to the speed of the game. I think getting healthy will help tremendously for across the board, third down, red zone, and the run defense. The one big question mark, we talked a little bit about it earlier, is DJ Reader is no longer a Houston Texan. DJ Reader was a guy that flew under the radar for a lot of people because he was a run stopper. He was a guy that was just very difficult to move on the interior of the defensive line. Not only is DJ Reader no longer here, but those bodies that the Texans are going to lean on in key situations are young guys, Charles Omenihu, Blacklock. There's two young guys there that you really don't know. You're not 100% sure what they're going to bring to the table. The key is to watch those guys throughout training camp and early in the season and see if they're answers for the third down red zone and run defense issues.
No, and it's going to be huge for them. And you can hear J.J. is trying to lead the way with that. Like, hey, guys, this is something that, you know, all of those things have to improve. But it starts with, as you said, staying healthy and us knowing exactly what we're doing. And he spoke of Weaver. And I think Weaver putting those guys in the best situation possible is going to be really helpful.
Red 22. Hut, hut, hut. to jump on a little college football real quick, Show. I don't know if you heard, but the Big 12 announced 10-game season, nine conference games and one non-conference game. I said nine conference games and one non-conference game for the Big 12. That means all your Power Fives are locked and loaded, right?
Yep.
They got a plan at least.
Yeah, they got a plan, and only the ACC and now the Big 12 of the Power Five give themselves at least a week where they can play someone outside of their conference.
Here's the thing with this, Show, is that this is a great sign for college football that they're going to at least get to a point where they get started. I mean, that's the plan, right, is that
– that's all you can hope for right now is just to get started.
Well, yeah, I mean, getting some kind of structure of a season together I think is step one. I got to believe that they've been going through and over and revamping all the safety protocols for the players in terms of the COVID-19 dynamic to this season. So you got to think they're ahead of the game there. But this is going to be a college football season like no other because – I think the quality of football is going to be through the roof.
Yeah.
You've eliminated some really crappy games off of all of these schedules.
And the amount of time they're going to have extra time, which I know the players are enjoying this, extra time to really have practice to even get better because they're used to not having preseason games. But they get more practice time. So I think at the start of the season, the football isn't going to look as sloppy as it has in the past because they're going to have more time. Because most, I don't know, I forgot which league it is, pushing it back to September 26th is when the season starts, which is a few weeks after. And I think most
leagues. That was the SEC, September 26th. And I think December the 19th is the championship game. So, yeah, think about that. I mean, I think college football is going to end up being the one entity in all of sports that is doing it the right way in terms of the buildup, pushing the start date back. These kids went in and were able to work out. Remember, they accelerated that workout period a couple of weeks in. Now the coaches could do walkthroughs with them because they all missed spring ball, and now I believe they're fixing the ramp up to where they can actually start doing more on-the-field activities than just walkthroughs. They can actually start practicing, doing some 7-on-7, throwing routes on air, things of that nature. And when that's said, they ain't going to start till September 26th. So it's August 3rd.
Yeah.
They got 6 weeks. They got 7 weeks from today.
God, this is Nick Saban's dream.
The buildup is going to be 2.5 months worth of ramping these kids up and getting them in shape to play. I just think this college product, they're doing it the right way. I think the product is going to be something like we've never seen it's all essentially Power Five schools playing each other.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a couple weeks before we see the quality of play back to where it's used to. Now they have extra time. I think that will jumpstart right when the season starts. All right, it's time to make big boy decisions, Houston. With the story of the day that the Astros have, it appears, lost their closer, Roberto Osuna, for the season. And, hell, maybe the same thing is likely with Justin Verlander. The question is, should the Astros still treat this season like it's championship or bust? That means go get what you need to go get. We'll answer that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show.
Clint, there's so much to think about with the big news of the day. If you are just joining us and we're busy, Roberto Osuna, the closer, he was taken out of the game Saturday night. That's right. He had pulled himself out with some elbow discomfort. Well, he had an MIR. He had an MRI. They flew him right to Houston after the game. And the latest diagnosis is that he will need to have Tommy John surgery, which will end his season. He is seeking a second opinion, but as of now, the initial diagnosis is that he will have Tommy John surgery and potentially his last pitch for the Astros because he'd be gone for the rest of this year and probably next year. The conversation that we've had and going back and forth is, man, well, what should this mean for the Astros? Like, James Click, man, go make a move. Should he go make a move? Should he go do something to improve this team? And I think it's a real thought because I don't think this is a slam dunk thing. Like, you got a lot of things to think about with this season. Will it go all the way to the end as we see the Cardinals and the Marlins keep having an outbreak? Should you trade those guys, and trade guys like Forrest Whitley or guys like Kyle Tucker, and would you get enough back to make you feel like you're a contender to fill the voids well enough for Osuna and possibly Verlander if he's out for the season? Clint, I don't think that you should make a move because I don't think there's a move out there to be made that puts you back into the same place as you were before those two injuries. What do you say?
Well, if there's not a move out there that puts you close to where you were, you don't need a Verlander and you don't need an Osuna for this lineup to carry you to a World Series and possibly win a World Series. Now, you're not going to be the favorite. There's no doubt about that. But to me, if there is a move out there, I mean, I don't know if there is or there isn't. If there is a move out there, which in the past the Astros organization has found a way to add guys like Verlander and guys like Greinke in the 11th hour and made the Astros better immediately and ultimately would ended up being sometimes the favorite to win the World Series. So I don't think that with or without the injuries to Verlander or Osuna, I believe that this organization, in fact, Jim Crane's on record to saying essentially the checkbook's open.
He did.
It's open. The trade deadlines moved back to August 31st, and the Astros were planning on being active in any way you slice it, without the injuries, before the injuries. And so you got to believe that now they're going to be more aggressive if there is a trade out there that will give them the talent, the arms to make a run in the playoffs and possibly get to another World Series and win another World Series. So whether we're talking about them just getting aggressive and acquiring a player without trading any of their young talent right now, let's say Forrest Whitley, they can move Forrest Whitley. They can move anybody that's not on the roster. When I say talking about moving young, Kyle Tucker, they could make some different moves and be aggressive, and I think they were probably planning to be aggressive anyway before this injury. Now this injury puts you in a place where I think you've got to consider moving guys that are on the roster. And the first name that comes to mind, right, is Kyle Tucker. I mean, Kyle Tucker's a guy that right now he's extremely valuable. He's 23 years old. I think he's been one of the best prospects in baseball for a few years now. This is a guy that if you're gonna move him, now's the time, because I'm not real sure that he can live up to the. I understand the team might need him down the road one day, but whose shoes is he filling really, and how big is he for the future of this organization? We're fixing to find out.
Yeah, listen, that's the thought. Where are you at? 713-572-4610. You can jump in on this, Tyler, and get you set up. Where do you side? Do you think that with the loss of Roberto Osuna, which it appears he's going to be out for the season, and we're awaiting what we're going to hear from Justin Verlander, who we've heard the same discomfort in the elbow with the forearm thing, which a lot of people have speculated that sounds like a UCL issue as well, and it was reported he was out for the season. With those two guys potentially being out, do you think the Astros front office should still operate as a championship or bust type of a team? And, man, I hear what you're saying, and all those moves. Man, Forrest, you can rock and roll out of here. Forrest Whitley can roll maybe one of their top pitching prospects, and then Kyle Tucker could roll. That's with those guys to really put you over the top. Without those guys, to me, I just don't think you can take a chance to say, all right, man, we're going to let Forrest Whitley go. We're going to let Kyle Tucker go. And yes, we still believe there is potential that those guys could be, you know, starters in some form or fashion for our team. But to give them up for parts that I don't believe you could get back to make you good enough to really, like you say, you won't be the favorite, but I'm just talking even good enough to really take yourself serious to be a contender. I wouldn't give that up.
I think the Astros lineup is too good to fold up shop on. I mean, you're folding up shop on Springer's being an Astro. There's a pretty good chance this is the last year that Springer's going to be an Astro. So you're just folding up the tent and saying, no, we're not going to make a push this year. We're not going to be aggressive and make any moves this year. We're going to roll the dice with no Springer in the future and keep Kyle Tucker around. I mean, to me, it just doesn't, with this lineup, the way it's structured right now, especially when Yordan Alvarez comes back, top to bottom, you've got to do everything in your power to position yourself to make a run. Now, the stars are going to have to align. Blake Taylor is going to have to be a big-time arm out of the pen, if not the closer that replaces Osuna, right? I mean, Josh James is going to have to bump back down into the pen and have some real production out of the pen in middle relief. Brad Peacock is going to have to come back and have some serious production as middle relief, if not one of those, what do they call them, the starter?
The starter.
When they're not really a starter, but you got to piece together a bullpen game and you – I can't remember what Lopez and Locker call him. Anyway, the point is he's going to have to be a guy that can chew up some innings. Jose Urquidy's going to have to come back. Christian Javier is going to have to continue to ball out. Framber Valdez is going to have to be a guy that continues to give you good production. Not great, but good production. All of those things have to happen. I just don't see with this lineup that you can trot out there every night. And as explosive as it can be when they're hitting on all cylinders, I don't see how you just go, Verlander's out, Osuna's out. We're not going to be aggressive this year.
Well, I can see why you won't be aggressive. I'm not saying give up on the season, right? I just think you have to – I would look at it and say, all right, man, one, I would assume there's going to be another arm injury, right? And I hate to say that. I would assume that somebody else is going to go down. Just the way the season is going, the pitchers and the issues that they're having, somebody else is going to go down. I would say let's fight with what we got, all right? We understand this lineup is great, and let's fight with what we got and McCullers and Urquidy and Greinke, and hopefully Javier is – this is a serious turn for this guy, and maybe Josh James can be a dominant force out of the bullpen. That's what I'm doing. I'm saying I'm not losing any prospects to get back something that I don't think would make – this team a real contender for a championship anyway. If you're gonna trade guys that could potentially help you down the line, it's got to be like for Justin Verlander, who will take you over the top, or Greinke, who you think will take you over the top. I don't think there's a move out there that takes you over the top when you lose those two pieces. I don't. So I'm not giving up on it. Let's go with what we got.
I'll trust you and say there's not a move out there. If there's not a move out there, then you have no choice but to roll with what you got. But I don't know that. I mean, I find it hard to believe that by August 31st, there's not going to be a closer or a starter available that can really move the needle for the Astros. In this game, I find it hard to believe that that's not out there somewhere. And if it is out there, I got to believe that the Astros are going to flip every stone to acquire that particular individual.
There will be. I just don't know if that person, and I don't think that person will put you into the conversation of Dodgers and Yankees like you were before.
So you don't think that one guy in-house could step up and give you some production anywhere near Osuna? And you go find a Greinke from last year or a Verlander from 2-3 years ago and plug them in, and the Astros aren't closer or as close as they were.
I'll put it this way: I don't want to bet people that can help me down the line. I'm not that confident. I'm not confident enough for people who can help me down the line to say, yeah, I'm willing to unload that.
So with this lineup and a possible move out there that could get you closer to those teams and have a chance to win a World Series, Kyle Tucker and Forrest Whitley do that for you, huh?
I would hold on to him. I would hold on because I think you would have to make two moves now. I think you would have to get some serious help in the. You saw that Dodgers bullpen. I mean, you can't do nothing. Like you saw that.
There's no doubt they're gonna. They don't have to make two moves, but if you want a quick fix, just to make two moves. You're gonna make one big, huge move, and you're gonna have to have a bunch of young cats step up. I mean, there's no doubt about that. After the Verlander injury, hell, before the Verlander injury, with guys opting out and in the middle relief, guys moving Josh James to a starting role, somebody in the middle relief was going to have to step up big time. They're still in that position, no doubt.
With the wins the Rockets had over the weekend, they were enormous, as we talked about earlier today with Ryan McDonough. They actually hold sole position of the four seed right now. But I'm telling you, that wasn't even the most important thing that occurred this weekend. We'll tell you what that is next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
Rockets got a big one tonight against Portland. A big one. I can't wait to see this Dame and CJ McCollum in that backcourt against this great backcourt in Harden and Westbrook. It should be great. Coming off this absolutely fantastic weekend, and if you missed it, we had Ryan McDonough, our NBA, our radio.com NBA insider. You can listen, you can catch him on the radio.com app. Go ahead and use that radio.com rewind, and you can hear the interview we had with him because he said at some point the Rockets were the most impressive team thus far in the bubble. And that is true. Their two wins, you'd be hard-pressed to find better ones over the Mavericks and the Bucks, especially the way they won them. But, Clint, as much as we talked yesterday about how enormous those two wins are, and they were, it still wasn't the most important thing we saw. To me, the most important thing we saw was the performance from Russell Westbrook, and more than just the performance, but how he went about his business. To me, you can have the size, the rebounding, all of that. To me, the number one concern for the Rockets' chances in the playoffs to me is Russell Westbrook's decision-making and his shot selection. I'm telling you, Clint, he can be rough in playoff games, in regular seasons. Clint, he has not shot over 30% in the last 3 years from three, but he won't stop taking them. He loves taking threes, but he can't make them, and he just keeps taking them. To the tune of the last 3 years in the playoffs, he attempted 10 threes a game in the playoffs in 2017, 7 threes a game in the playoffs in 2018 and 19, shooting under 30%. In the two games this weekend, Russ shot 51 times, 45 of them were twos. That is huge, and that is the formula that will be best for the Rockets and will be best for Russell Westbrook if he can continue to do that. He's got to shoot twos and ditch that three-point game because it's the worst thing he does by far.
Yeah, well, I'll agree with your initial point. In the first two games, it's easily the most important part, right, of the two wins is Russell. Hell, we would come in, it was like, this dude's fresh off the COVID-19. Is he going to be in shape? I don't know that anybody would have bet against him being in shape, but to think that he was going to come in and play damn near the entire game in the first two and they beat in hell and overtime in the first one and get two victories like this. So I think first and foremost, him being healthy and him being in shape is a huge plus. But when you really dig into this thing, show the shot selection and being more calculated in playing the position is definitely the big, obviously, the difference between this Rockets team and past Rockets teams. Obviously, the difference between this Rockets team and the team that we saw start the season. I don't know that I recall a situation or a player show to where you can literally watch it unfold on every single play. You can see him thinking in a sense of getting the rock, Brooke Lopez backed off of him, and him getting to the elbow and getting the shot up or drawing the defender out far enough and making the decision to get to the rack. And then, you know, if it's not there or if he's not feeling it or if the offense isn't set up yet, boom, he kicks it to somebody else, either kicks it out to the corner or he gives it to Harden and lets him do his thing. I don't remember a player that was so – all gas, no break. Nothing was calculated. It was, I'm going to go balls to the wall for four quarters and my athletic ability is going to be better than yours and I'm going to win some games. To a guy that is literally every possession is calculated. And so I think it's beautiful to watch first and foremost, but I can't disagree with you that the change between years past and what he's done to right now, it's hard to believe that it, that we're seeing it happen.
No, and it's big, and I'm still skeptical. All right,
you think he's going to revert back, huh?
Man, it's just human nature, right? Like you played. I'm sure there's some ticks or some things that you when you played ball that you just reverted to, even if it were things that you were that every coach you had worked with you to try to get rid of. It is hard to revert, especially when you're as good as Russell Westbrook, and this has worked to the tune of an MVP, to the tune of back-to-back years averaging a triple-double. It's worked. It's made you millions. It is hard to think that you revert back.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I just think though the numbers that you just threw out there show. I knew they weren't rocket good. You know, I knew they weren't PJ Tucker from the corner good. I know it's a bad timing to use PJ Tucker, but the percentage from the corner is as good as anybody in the league, if not better. They're not hard. You know, the percentages, I knew they weren't good. I didn't realize they were that bad. And I didn't realize that it was that egregious. I didn't realize that he was just pulling from anywhere essentially as often as possible.
Just going, man. Just lighten him up, man.
But I got to believe that with the change that the Rockets have made over the last, I guess 4 months, considering COVID-19 hit right in the gut of it, I got to believe that that's been a big part of the conversation for the first time in his career, right? I mean, I think coaches have probably randomly had conversations about shot selection and about how he's not shooting well from certain spots. But with the Rockets, you got to believe that it's been a hey, man.
Well, I think he has to trust his and he played with Kevin Durant. He has to trust his teammates better.
Yeah, but I don't know. Do you think that there's ever been a situation where it's blatantly obvious, like, hey, man? You taking that shot is not an option. Like, you being more...
I feel like it's been that way.
I don't know,
for the
man.
Last few years that he's played.
I don't know that he's ever been anywhere where the
I told you.
Analytics and percentages meant so much from beyond the line. And so now it's not just, hey, man, your shot selection sucks. It's like, hey, man, we're the best in the business at deciding whether you should take as many threes, and we're telling you, your ass don't need to be shooting threes.
Yeah, and he's played with other great players that are – like, I remember last year in the playoffs, I thought Paul George was going to hit him with a chair, right? I thought Paul George – like this year, Clint, man, he shot 25% from three this year, 29 last year, 29 the year before. Paul, at the end of a game, the Thunder were down three in a playoff game. And Paul George is like a 35, 40% three-point – one of the best three-point shooters in the league. Russ took it, shooting 29%. Yeah. Russ took it. Like, I thought, right then and there, I didn't throw it in my head, but if I point to a moment, I think Paul George said, I'm getting the hell up out of here. I'm going, let me go to Kawhi, let me go somewhere. And he's played with Kevin. Kevin has had that look on his face, too, before, where Russ is just jacked up shots for no good reason. But if he can continue with that decision-making and that shot selection, 51 shots, love it. You got to get up attempts. 45 were twos. He has led the league in paint touches and paint points since they've gone to the small ball. This has to be the formula.
It's definitely the formula, but the one you're getting me concerned here. You're talking me into being worried, right? I mean, I mean, worry doesn't fix anything, but you've got me worried that, like, I don't think it ever becomes a consistent problem where we're like, damn, Westbrook, what are you doing? I see it. If it rears its head, it's going to be one. Like, at the end of a game, the Rockets are down two. He's got the rock in his hand, and Brook Lopez backs off down to the block and says, shoot it if you want to, and he just knee-jerk reacts and pulls the trigger and bangs it off the rim.
And I'm trying. Like, what we're talking about here, the biggest thing to me over the weekend was Russell Westbrook's decision-making and shot selection. He shot 51 shots over the weekend. 45 of them were twos. He was just not jacking up threes like he normally does, and he's been one of the worst three-point shooters
in
basketball.
And the threes that he did take, even though I cringed when he pulled, they were still one of those, like, damn, it ain't even nobody. You got to take that.
I give you two of them, Russ. I give you two. I can't take it, guys. I got to shoot it. I give you two of those a night. Not 10. Like you averaged 3 years ago in the playoffs at shooting 29%. It's just, that's why Sunday night was so big, because if you remember the game, they got down, I think, 112-104, something like that, with like 3 minutes left, and they had to make their run. That is a prime time when Russ comes down and just jacks it up.
Yeah.
But maybe Harden having the ball is a help to that. So because you're inbounding that puppy to Russ, but he made good decisions. And remember, he made the foul shots late because he was going to the basket.
So I'm giving him max three in the first half.
Don't you take one in the second?
That three, because here's the deal: what if he knocks down two of three?
Oh God, he's feeling it. You can't tell him.
But like I mean, Kanye think the defense now the locker room at halftime of the opponent's like, boys, what the hell are we going to do now? Russell's hit two out of three. We got to expand a little bit, and now you really got him in a situation. So I'd give him a couple. I'd give him a couple in the first half, but once we get into that second half, damn sure in the fourth quarter, yeah, Russ, if you ain't inside that 3-point line, you can't even think about pulling the trigger.
Yeah, Clint Sterner and the show with you right here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. Man, I heard some chirping again, Clint.
No, here we go.
I heard some chirping again that in the loop.
These damn birds in Houston, boy, they chirping
you,
all over the place.
I'm telling you, I heard crows this time. I heard that in the loop, Tyler let me know that they had some words for us. Is that right, Tyler? They had some words for it. All right, I hadn't heard it. You said I heard some people tell me that Lopez said something about Clint that the Chiefs. You say Chief, you do. That is a line of yours. You say Chief so much that he couldn't deal with that. You said they said something about me. I don't know this yet. This is a surprise. It's the first time hearing of this.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you hear what they had to say about you first. Show then we'll dive into Clint.
All right. Oh Lord, this is Landry and Landry Locker and John Lopez, otherwise known as Woody and Buzz Lightyear.
What if Sports Radio 610 was locked in a bubble? Show would be the one FaceTiming his wife the whole time.
Wow.
That's the most accurate text that we've had on this show in the last 6 weeks. 100%. Show would be FaceTiming his wife.
What'd you do? Go to brunch with Landry and talk about your wife the whole time? Talk about nothing. Not that I blame you. I mean,
I didn't. But hey, I take that, baby. I take that. I hope you're listening, honey. See, they talked about Brownie me on the bubble. They said I talked to my lady. I hope you're listening to me, baby. I take that, baby. Hell yeah, I'm whipped. I take that, baby. Hell yeah,
he's whipped.
That's better than something else. It'd be better. They said, hey, he got. They should be on the sneak. Nah, good.
No, that'd have been a bad deal, right? Yeah, sure.
They said Figgy would be the one who would sneak out to go to the strip club.
Wow.
Yeah, don't put that on me, Doug.
Figgy doesn't strike me as a sneak out, go to the strip club guy, but okay.
But here we go. So that was what they had to say about you, show, if there was a 6-10 bubble like they're doing in Orlando with NBA. Here is what they had to say about Clint.
No. What if Sports Radio 610 was locked in a bubble? Clint would be working out like four times a day.
That is true.
I don't want to call it fake hustle.
Oh, wait a minute.
But when Clint gets around the bros, Clint's going to try to show out Terminator mode, and he'd come out looking jacked.
He would. However, I want to change my previous answer. It's not here we go, baby, that would end up being the most irritating.
Me and Coors Light and jump off in this pool.
That would get old. I love that man dearly. But I think enough Chiefs after a while, right? I mean,
we're going to find y'all.
Right. If you had to hear Chief every day, multiple times a day for 2 months straight with no exit plan, so to speak, that might get a little old.
Here's the deal. I appreciate Lock Dog. I appreciate Lock Dog's faith in the workout.
Oh, I think you would definitely do that. You would turn that up.
I would definitely like to if I'm stuck somewhere in a bubble with a bunch of dudes, like let's get a group together and let's garage gang and get in shape and get a sweat in. And I mean, hell, that's what dudes do.
Yeah,
I mean,
locker would be running in sweaters.
But I would like to add that came from a guy that the most recent Instagram post that he had, he was jogging through the downtown streets of Houston with no shirt on.
Did he have a shirt on?
No shirt on. He's going from sweaters to no shirt.
Yeah, he'd be wearing.
He's feeling himself.
Yeah, he's feeling himself.
He's feeling himself a little bit. But here's the other deal. So I heard that. And I thought, first of all, I know I say Chief a lot. I mean, it's just we all say certain things a lot. And I've never had anybody complain and be like, hey, I'm annoyed as hell with you. You say chief too much. Okay. To me, that's one of those things. Like, if that kind of thing annoys you, then we're probably not going to hang out much anyway, right? So, but OG's my guy. John Lopez is my guy. That's how I got here. John Lopez is a very good friend of mine. However,
with the however,
this is what you can't do. Mm-mm. This is what you can't do. You can't make that comment you just heard yesterday about, yeah, Chief, I just can't hear too much Chief. That'd get old real quick. And then literally the very next day, I'm driving in listening to In the Loop, and this is what I hear.
Let's redo this deal again, Chief, to channel Clint Sterner.
Well, one more time?
Let's redo this deal again, Chief, to channel Clint Sterner.
You can't single me out on Monday and tell me that my chief would be annoying in a bubble. And then on Tuesday, all of a sudden, you just use it.
You think he likes it? I think he likes saying it.
Well, I just don't think – I'm not going to say all that. I just don't think it annoys him the way that he – the picture he painted on day one.
I don't think it normally does. I think what Lopez is saying, if y'all were together and he got 56 chiefs in –
I don't overuse the word chief when I'm talking to my buddies.
You let it off pretty
I don't
often.
Over 52 chiefs at dinner. That's a little bit ridiculous.
Tyler, he would. You'd say chief a bunch of times. It's all
you
good,
know what?
Chief.
You and OG can kiss it's every bit of my
Tyler,
ass, chief.
You
how
would,
about that?
You would.
How about
when
that?
When we went, it's your lead in. It's your lead in. It's when you say stuff to us, hey, chief, it's your lead in. You do it every time.
That's subconscious.
Sports Radio 610. Run in.
Come on, Lopez. I know you got to be here. Come on, Chief.
What you got, Chief?
Listen here, Chief. I got to tell you something right now. Foremost, Chief, the show explanation, the show characterization came from a text. We merely were the messengers on the text for show. Now, on Clint, as I said there, I love you dearly, man. But, Chief, three months of hanging out at the pool and drinking some cold Coors Lights with you, and we're putting an exclamation on every conversation with a chief. Dude, even sex gets old if you do it four times a day, every day for 2 months.
Which has never happened.
No. Well, man, speak for yourself, Chief.
That's Lopez. He's not lying. Not only would you end those sentences with Chief, you'd start up with Chief, too. You started with Chief, and you'd end it.
I promise you one thing.
I hope it's in the way.
I promise you one thing. I wouldn't be sitting by that pool by myself. I promise you one thing. I'd have some partners sitting there with me drinking some cold beer, Chief.
Man, I'm picking up all the extras.
I bet you.
All right, we do this each and every day. These stories you need to know. 5 o'clock fire coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.